This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Author and historian Andrew Burstein joins us on the long line from Oklahoma, where he is the Mary Frances Barnard Professor of 19th Century of U.S. History at the University of Tulsa. His new book is The Original Knickerbocker, The Life of Washington Irving. Good afternoon, Andrew.
Good afternoon, Coy.
How you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks.
We were just chatting on the phone before we went on the air. You actually are a former resident of Charlottesville.
I am indeed. I received my PhD in history in 1994. I've been writing primarily on Thomas Jefferson since then, two books and a number of articles. My most recent book, before I turned to Washington Irving, came out 2 years ago. That was Jefferson's Secrets, Death and Desire at Monticello.
Now, did your work at UVA lead you naturally to Jefferson? Is that one reason you decided to pursue graduate work at UVA, or is that just a nice...
Yeah, that's precisely why I decided to pursue graduate study at UVA. That and the presence of the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Foundation Professor of History, Peter Onuf, who I assume is still a local celebrity and my ideal of a mentor. So I loved my years working with Peter and working on Jefferson.
And, of course, folks may remember you, I certainly do, from Ken Burns' documentary on Thomas Jefferson. You were one of those talking head scholars who would reappear every once in a while and offer your commentary.
That is true. That's, in fact, exactly 10 years ago that film came out on PBS.
What, has it been 10 years?
My gosh.
Wow. Boy, how time flies. What was that process like, being one of Ken Burns' experts?
Well, it was enjoyable seeing how he makes films from the inside perspective. I started out actually just as an outside commentator or reviewer of the script. I was there to give an objective historian's appraisal of whether they got Jefferson right and what needed to be done to improve the historical accuracy of it. And I suggested that there was a lot more passion to Thomas Jefferson than he had put in the original rough cut of the film. And he said, fine, you come over here and you add the passion to the film. So I kind of came in the back door.
Historian and author Andrew Burstein is our guest. We're speaking live. He's with us from the University of Tulsa. His new book, The Original Knickerbocker. So tell us how you took up the pen or turned on the computer and thought about writing about Washington Irving. I will tell you, I know next to nothing about this guy. Your book is fascinating. I had no idea, and I guess most folks weren't aware, that he was really a celebrity.
He was a giant celebrity in the 19th century. I can tell you just very briefly how I took a break from Jefferson and gravitated to Irving. Jefferson's Secrets was about Jefferson's retirement years, how he faced death and pondered the afterlife. So burying Jefferson for the moment, I mean, once you kill him off, you got to move on. I returned to my own roots. I grew up near Irving's Sleepy Hollow in Westchester County, New York, and now I teach in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where Irving is almost as famous, having come through here, which was then Indian country, in 1832. He wrote a book called A Tour on the Prairies. That, my personal experience, feeling a bit of nostalgia for Irving's hometown on the Hudson, and as a historian, recognizing that no previous historian has ever written a biography of Washington Irving, nor do historians generally consider him that important a historical actor, and no one else had done a full biography of Irving since 1935, and that guy was
wow.
An English professor from Yale who thought Irving superficial and merely average, and one of the reasons you haven't heard much about Washington Irving is that this professor from Yale kind of sunk his reputation and He's no longer cool to teach, but as a historian, he's an absolutely fascinating character because, I've actually compared him in some ways to Benjamin Franklin to say that Irving was to the 19th century what Franklin was to the 18th. Not only owing his success to the printing press, but becoming a symbol in the old world for America's genius. Neither man attended college, although they both received honorary degrees later on. But in their respective ages, they were known for something else. They were known for the art of living, for the impact they had on the national spirit. They became, the two Americans whom Europe paid particular attention to and actually adored and considered, amazing, innovative, and globetrotting. So, how could Irving, someone who lived this sort of a life, come to be forgotten? That's one of the things that prompted me to write.
Historian Andrew Burstein is our guest, and his new book is The Original Knickerbocker, The Life of Washington Irving. The phone lines are open at 977-1070 if you've got a comment or a question. Let's talk specifically about how this man, Washington Irving, did impact American life. In your book, you talk about the fact that he originated the phrase Knickerbocker, and he was the first to call New York City Gotham.
Yeah, well, I think the publicist at my press maybe wrote that he was the first to call New York City Gotham. He might have been the first, but I try not to assert something if I can't supply evidence. In the first popular series of articles that he wrote that were published as a pamphlet, he wrote them with some friends, and that was called Salmagundi, which was kind of a mishmash of political satire and social satire, and focused attention on the ways New Yorkers lived. And he did, he or one of his co-authors, one was his brother and one was James Kirk Paulding, another long-forgotten Knickerbocker writer, one or the other came up with this idea that New York was Gotham, this place where mad people lived.
And his impact on Christmas, he originated the explain this, because
this is something that very, very few people understand, because we like to trace Christmas to Charles Dickens. And it is true that Dickens came to America just before writing A Christmas Carol. But Dickens, in fact, paid homage to Washington Irving, writing to him frequently, saying there's no living writer whose approbation I should feel so proud to earn as you, sir. And he, in a sense, came to New York just to meet Irving. Irving had, in his Knickerbocker's History back in 1809, had introduced the popular figure of Santa Claus, St. Nicholas, who had something to do with the founding of Manhattan, which was, of course, a Dutch colony. So it's St. Nicholas, who was a Dutch saint, patron saint. And Irving made Santa Claus into the popular figure that he since became. Then, a decade later, when he went to England, Irving wrote a series of stories about traditional English Christmas, and he introduced in his writing such ideas as mistletoe hanging from the light, and if you walk under it, you know the kissing privilege unfolds. And so many of these, the holiday table and the habits of the traditional Christmas that we tend to associate with the Dickensian themes, Irving actually introduced to America and recovered from Great Britain or the Netherlands. And historically, we give Dickens credit when Dickens properly gave credit to Irving.
Author Andrew Burstein is our guest. The book is The Original Knickerbocker, The Life of Washington Irving. So tell us about these. His two stories, Rip Van Winkle and The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, were instant classics, were they not?
Yes, they were. They were published as part of the sketchbook. That's what the collection was called. And it was not actually bound as a book for 4 or 5 years after he wrote it. But in 1818, 1819, while he was in England, he published first in London and almost simultaneously in Philadelphia and New York. And this is important because he was not just the man who introduced Rip Van Winkle, the first quintessential American folktale, or the story Legend of Sleepy Hollow, which we today continue to associate with the with another holiday that Irving deserves credit for, Halloween. But beyond that, in writing the sketchbook that contained these stories, Irving was the first American to earn his living as an author, and also the first to do something about book piracy, because there was not international copyright. And he arranged, through his friends, to get his manuscript on a fast boat to New York so that he could have his works appear in print at the same time in England and America, so as to prevent the book pirates from grabbing hold of something that's just been published in London, sailing across to America, and reaping the financial reward. So he made it possible for authors to earn a living.
Author Andrew Burstein is our guest, historian. His new biography about Washington Irving. So we've been talking about his work and his impact on American culture. What was he like as a man? Tell us a little bit about his personal life.
He was a lifelong bachelor, and in his stories, bachelorhood looms large. One of the things I've been trying to interpret, both from his extensive correspondence, and for those of you near a university library, everything he ever wrote, from his little scrapbooks with the sketches that he did, his morning ruminations as he sat over coffee, and his letters with the famous and the not so famous, they're all there. They've all been published, so they're quite accessible. And about Irving the man, I've looked into his bachelorhood and the culture of the bachelor in America in the 19th century. And Irving, it's kind of curious. He absolutely idolized young women, teenage girls, it seems quite innocent. But once a woman, a young woman, became carnal, shall we say, he was no longer interested. And when, for example, Mary Shelley, the author of Frankenstein, expressed an interest in Irving and perhaps marrying him, this was a woman of experience. And although she was considered quite attractive, Irving wasn't interested. And I don't see any interest in him, in his life, for women other than virgins, and he always made excuses for why he didn't marry. He said, "Oh, my time has passed," and he said that when he was in his 30s, and he just kind of avoided the question, or said that, well, he wasn't wealthy enough to marry the kind of woman he wanted, and then his time had passed. So he always had an excuse for why he didn't marry. But in his stories, bachelors are always happy people. Who may have been shunned by one woman once, and then for the rest of their lives they couldn't get over it. You know, that sort of romantic nonsense that was once credible but no longer is.
It sounds a little creepy, actually.
I wouldn't say that he was gay, because there's no indication that he had sex either with men or women. But he seems what I call somewhere in the book an impossible dreamer, that he envisions beautiful marriages, and they're very conventional, very traditional. He seems uncomfortable with women who are socially successful. He likes the sort of like Thomas Jefferson, likes the ideal of womanhood as something pure and ennobling for men, he I think intentionally refuses to give us clues as to his own emotional life. He was very close with his family. He was, like Benjamin Franklin, the youngest son in a large family of modestly born merchant family.
Would it be a jump too far to perhaps to say that he was emotionally immature?
No, I think that you're precisely correct. There is something very adolescent about him. Also, when it comes to talking about courtship, he's very dreamy and not very realistic.
And the literature that he wrote is often the same way, isn't it?
It is.
It's dreamy, you know, literature.
There's so much of him in his stories, and so many stories that we don't know. We have heard of the legend of Sleepy Hollow, even though it was hijacked by Johnny Depp and Tim Burton, and no longer resembles Irving's original story. Rip Van Winkle was performed as a play throughout the 19th century, and even as a silent film in the early 20th century. But beyond that, Irving wrote ghost stories that Edgar Allan Poe adored and was influenced by. He wrote Wild West stories and had a lot to do with introducing that romantic genre to American literature. He, after he came to Oklahoma and went buffalo hunting on the plains, he wrote the story of Captain Bonneville on his travels and travails across the Trans-Mississippi West and the Rocky Mountains. And so, you know, so much of our literature has been influenced by Irving, and so many more famous authors credit Irving with having inspired them. Certainly Poe is an example of that.
Historian Andrew Burstein's new book is The Original Knickerbocker, The Life of Washington Irving. Andrew, I've got about a minute left, but I did want to ask you, just to sort of pull back here and with a wider lens, what is it you think that most Americans don't get or perhaps don't understand about the 19th century in our country?
Wow, that's a big question. Well, I think one of the things we don't understand is how conscious people had to be of the primitive state of medicine. I mean, you read in whoever is writing letters, they're constantly wondering whether someone is alive, or they arrive at a place and they say, well, I arrived here, you know, without getting killed. We think of the Wild West as pertaining to the latter 30, 40 years of the 19th century, but the first half of the 19th century, in fact, I think was, you know, dirtier. People were surviving for less years because there was more movement, but that movement carried disease with them.
Right,
so
right.
Part of the reason why there's all this romantic literature is that people have to deal constantly with loved ones dying on them.
Andrew Burstein, thank you, sir. We appreciate your time.
Sure. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Absolutely. Take care. Andrew Burstein got his PhD right here at UVA. His book is The Original Knickerbocker, The Life of Washington Irving.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.